This week's show is about the essence of reality. What's that? Well, I think it's very interesting. And I've had this belief, I guess, for a good part of my life. Maybe not all the time. Kind of what you believe in strong enough becomes reality. You kind of create your own reality. That's the way I would describe it. Maybe Thomas, my guest, has a little different way of describing it, but he's written a book. He's got a website. Actually, somebody sent me an email, and I was looking this over, and I thought, this is pretty cool. He talks about many different things, dream analysis, meditation, self-hypnosis, suggestion, kind of like the idea that we're kind of pre-programmed by our parents, and we can actually change that and maybe bring forth some great things, including healing, including a better understanding. So, and you know, this, we kind of touch on religion a little bit here. He does. And my goal is not to trash anybody's beliefs. If you have beliefs in faith, religion, or whatever the case may be, I'm not here to offend you. That's not what I'm doing. I just find that there's a truth here and probably in all teachings. And that's what I'm trying to get at. So without further delay, Mr. Thomas Daniel Nehrer.
Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Welcome to another show. My guest this week, Thomas Daniel Nehrer. He is from Pittsburgh, home of the world champion Steelers. How you doing, Tom?
Oh, I'm really good, and it's nice that you all noted that. It was a fun kind of a run through the playoffs, and the Pittsburgh tends to get all excited about the Steelers, emphasized, of course, by the failure of the Pirates and the near misses of the Penguins, but yeah, it's fun.
Are you a Pittsburgh native then pretty much your whole life?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a little town called Tarentum, kind of in the northeast corner of Allegheny County, and traveled an awful lot in my life. I've spent a year when I was a young guy hitchhiking all over Europe. I traveled out west several times, and at one point, let me see, I had returned to Europe and bought a van with a buddy of mine and traveled around a bit and met a Fräulein in Munich, and ultimately she became the Frau. Mm. And I lived in Munich a few years, and we decided to go to the States, so we went out to California. And, of course, that included a trip in an old VW van out west. So I've traveled around a lot, but ultimately, let's see, I was in Paris for about a year on a project, and my son was just about ready for school. And we came back to the Pittsburgh area here. You know, it's it is a nice city. We've got a good opera and a good symphony and the sports teams and the climate's probably a little bit warmer than you up there in the Upper Peninsula.
Probably. You said you've been through the UP before, though, right?
Yeah. Well, that was a trip. I was headed from here out to Minneapolis to give a talk. This is a few years back. And there was another group out in Salmon Arm, British Columbia, that wanted me to give a talk. And I thought, well, that's in the same direction. I'm just going to head on out and do that, not realizing completely that it's a good little haul from Minneapolis to British Columbia. But I have a cousin that lives near, how do you pronounce that, Houghton Lake?
Houghton Lake. Yeah.
And so I stopped to visit him, and then I drove on up towards the Upper Peninsula. I'd never been up that way, and I thought, oh, that looks neat. And there was an older fella, probably in his 90s, who had been my grandfather's cousin. Still was, I guess, technically. And I stopped to visit him, and he had all these old tales about the old days of growing up, and so that was fun to visit him, and went on up through across the big bridge up there, and it's spectacular. But that was midsummer when, the cold winds have long ceased to blow.
Yeah, sometimes it's pretty cold. Now, you have, you've written books before? Have you written more than one book?
No, here's the situation with that. It's the essence of reality is almost a track of my life of looking at what's going on here. I was never really satisfied as a kid with what they told me. You know, you sit in church and they say, oh, this and that, and I would go home and say to my mother, oh, you can't walk on water, it's just too soft, you fall right through it. And I say, you can't turn water into wine, there's stuff in wine that's not in water. So I sort of dropped away from the that thinking and spent much of my life traveling and reading and looking inward, which I'm sure we'll get into a little mm-hmm. bit, to understand better what's going on here. Well, I would say along through my 40s and into my 50s, I thought I had some worthwhile things to say. So I would put together some articles, and you know how you look up in those days, you'd look up in the writer's market where to send these articles you want to write. And there, of course, have been New Age magazines, Consciousness, and so forth. So I'd write these. I'm a pretty good writer. I'd send them in, and they'd always get rejected. So I thought, well, that's not so great. And by the mid-90s, I have to think 95, 96, the Internet appeared and slowly became, in those days it was used a bit, but more and more so as a means to communicate. So I thought, oh, here, I can write what I want, very much like your podcast. You mm-hmm. can present material, and you don't have an editor or a publisher looking over your shoulder trying to change what you're right. looking at for the purpose of some agenda beyond yours. So I thought, well, okay, so I created a website. And for a good 9 or 10 years, I added to it various perspectives on how life works, how we engage in events and relationships, and how very much they reflect our own nature. And that's what I get into a lot in EOR.
You know, I noticed that you said that you take a lot of what you've learned. I think a lot of us probably have, right? But you take a lot of what you learned by studying some of the different ancient teachings and different individuals that have been through, that have been considered maybe teachers, maybe enlightened beings, people that were trying to pass something forward. So did you take this all and just kind of formulate your own belief? Or?
Well, there's more to it than that. Let's finish that one thread, and then I'll lean over there that I was... I'd had the website for maybe 9 or 10 years when a publisher in England wrote to me and said, oh, I really like what you've written. If you want to write a book, I'll publish it. So that's basically, I said, sure. I mean, that was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The same batch of emails, I had offers for $24 million from Zaire and Viagra and whatever else. And
yeah.
But this was legitimate. He's a wonderful guy, a good publisher. They do about, at this point, 12 to 15 titles a month in body, mind, spirit, consciousness, philosophy, and so forth. So that got me to write the book, because at some point I was not about to bow down to some editor or a publisher and write a book and then go out and knock on doors. So this is a kind of, I think if you're in the right place in your life, the doors very often open for you easier than the ones you try to bang into.
Mm-hmm.
What was the next thread there we were talking about?
I was going to ask you, how did you come up with the essence of reality?
Well, as a title, it really fits, because there is something going on in life, and it's generally not covered by the various philosophies or spiritual disciplines or whatever that you encounter. And my engagement of that is, when you look back on it, it was pretty straightforward, but it never seemed that way along the trail. It's, I guess, a lot like hiking any trail. When you're done, you know what it looked like,
yeah.
But along the way, you don't know what's around the next bend. But I, from childhood, when I sort of dropped religion, you tend to latch on to science. There's that little period of life when you have all the answers, and that's your teenage period. And
some people never outgrow that, maybe.
Well, some don't, right. But I, at that time for me, it was science. And I spent a year, I'd got my degree in chemical engineering, worked for DuPont for a while. They were nice enough to keep me from having to go to Vietnam and shoot people or be shot by. And so anyway, I left there. My deferment was not needed then. I don't know how old you are, but back in those days, they came out with a draft system, so I wasn't
mm-hmm.
about to be sent to Vietnam, so I left there and spent a year traveling all over Europe. Well, I saw a couple of really neat things there that I think are very helpful to people who really are curious and interested in how life works. One of them was that I was traveling around hitchhiking and everywhere from Ireland to Scandinavia to Morocco and Greece and all over the place. And I could see that here were people with different ideas, different beliefs, different cultural views, and no matter what they thought or believed or felt, it worked just fine. You didn't need to have grown up in Western Pennsylvania learning typical mid-American attitudes in order for the world to work.
Right.
And that was, TJ, kind of my first introduction into understanding that whatever you believe in seems to be true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you state that, it sounds so obvious, but we get so embedded with beliefs and definitions and hidden assumptions when we're little, growing up, 6 months old, a year old, 2 years, childhood stories, the language itself and how our parents treat us and so forth are full of values and understandings that we just absorb.
Yeah, just imagine if we didn't get that and we were allowed to develop, huh?
Well, that's it. Of course, it's impossible because you can't get to be the adult phase without going through, you know, pupa or whatever you want to call it. But the difficulty is that when you absorb these, they distort reality. Mm-hmm. Whatever your beliefs are, your mind will kind of slough off information that doesn't fit into your beliefs and reinforce your beliefs with whatever conclusions you draw from what you experience. And, of course, the tricky part is that whatever beliefs you hold, they seem to be true, so you always end up recycling a lot of your ways of looking at the world.
And do you draw those things to you? If you believe in a certain thing, does it seem to be drawn to you?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, you just, you know, if something happens and you think that there's a God out there making things happen, it just reinforces that. Another person who doesn't believe in a God and thinks that things are just all happening kind of randomly will look at the same events and draw simply different conclusions.
Now, let me ask you this. We've got to go to a break in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Do you believe in a God?
I often say in my talks that there is a God and you are he or it or she or whatever I happen to phrase at the time. There, you'll find that you create patterns in your life, that you attract certain people into relationships, you have certain recurring health issues, and you are the source of that. And that's what I tend to talk about in all of my means of expression here, is how to look inward and find the roots to those patterns so that you can change.
That's interesting. We're going to take a break. Thomas Daniel Nair, he's out of Pittsburgh. It's The Essence of Reality on Out There.
Out There. Out There. Out There.
If you'd like to find out more about Thomas Daniel Nair, go to nair.net. That's nehrer.net. And you can check out the four angles and all the different things that he talks about much more in detail on his site, and you can also take a look at his book.
It's Out There, Out There, Out There.
His name is Thomas Daniel Nair, and he has a website. It's called Essence of Reality. It actually, I think somebody sent me an email. That's how I found out about Tom. So we're talking about the essence of reality, and I went to his website, and I was looking, and it's kind of broken down into what you call four angles. Is that correct, Tom?
Yeah, there's a lot more there. I've answered many questions from people and have different peripheral views of what I'm doing and what my point is and all that, but I like to look at life from four angles. The book is broken down in that same fashion. Angle one in both the website and the book, I would also mention that my website's always free. I tend to, when I give talks, point out that my purpose here isn't to make a bunch of money selling a bunch of books. Mm. It's to communicate, I think, very useful insights into what's going on here in reality. And my talks as I travel around the country, those are always free also. I do make a few bucks from the book, and it helps to cover expenses, but really my purpose is to, I think, benefit other people with what I've gained in a lifetime of searching. Anyway, yeah. Angle one, I look at how life works. I cover some of the illusions that are formed by how we learn to see the world. And talk about how there is a kind of a flow in your life, but the flow isn't from the past through the present into the future. It's more from what you hold within you, the nature of what you are, gets embedded into the events and relationships that you encounter. You'll find, again, I think we just touched on it in the last segment there, that you attract certain types of people into your relationships. And no sooner do you move on to maybe other friends, you're going to find they're very similar because there's a need you have and you tend to attract that into your life.
Now, how do you do this? Is this something that's done through energy, mentally, physically? I mean, if you had to describe that, how do we draw these things to us?
Well, that's where it gets tricky because you have to come to recognize that the basis of what we are is consciousness. in our Western way of looking at things, we look very often as though the objects and the real world and the grass and the birds and the things that you see in front of you are real, and you're just the kind of a poor sister that got here because your brain happens to function. If you look through those images that are formed by our scientific worldview, you see that the basis is consciousness, and at the basis of the events that unfold in your life is meaning. They tend to either fulfill your desires or negate them or neutralize them. So what you really want to have happen either doesn't happen, or it takes an awful lot of effort to get it to happen, or it can happen easily. Mm. We tend to learn the ways to look at the world that the objects out there are real, and we're kind of this artificial sister going along for the ride, when in fact the reality comes from the consciousness that we are. You'll find woven into your dreams and into your life the meaning that comes from within you. How it happens gets to be tricky because it's hard to describe such things. It's much easier to just see them and understand how your life unfolds.
So there's got to be obviously a connection between us and the other. Consciousness has to be connected to all consciousness, right? If everybody's got it.
Absolutely. That's without a doubt the case, but how it impacts you is always going to be filtered through the values that you hold, which gets us back to the initial point you asked there about a God, that basically you, at the basis of what you are the determiner of what's going on in your life. What I express in the essence of reality is a track that I've come to see very clearly and make use of. For much of my younger years, in my 30s and 40s, I had various illnesses and, needing medicine and various techniques to deal with sprained ankles and recurring colds and allergies and sinus issues and the same raft of things that we all tend to impact. But I came to realize that actually the first book that got me towards that, interestingly enough, was Self-Hypnotism by Leslie Lacrone. Lacrone was a pioneer in self-hypnosis and pointed out that you'll find with your various physical ailments that there's always this inner component to what's going on with your body. That if you find and deal with the inner components, get rid of them, that your body really knows how to work very well on its own.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that and ran with it,
and
realizing
so
later that it wasn't just your body, but your relationships. You know, I went through periods of time with trouble with my wife and kind of split up for a while, and I hooked up with an old girlfriend, and it was very apparent that the same problems my wife was showing, so did this old girlfriend. I thought, well, wow, geez, maybe it's me.
What a coincidence, huh?
And that's what I mean. We tend to create these patterns, and once you see the pattern and understand that there's an inner root to that that can be broken down and clearly seen, and when you reshape that inner realm.
And that's not something that, see, you talked about self-hypnosis. That's something that's really, you've got to change that inner thinking or that inner feeling, from what I understand, what you're saying. That's something that's got to be pre-programmed or reprogrammed?
That's a good way to put it, yeah. I talk about four principal techniques to look inward. And one of them, of course, is meditation, to begin to quiet the mind so that you can actually focus on anything. The mind tends to throw up a bunch of chatter. The other is self-hypnosis, tied with a tool that Leslie Lacrone actually introduced to me, but it's commonly used in psychology, called ideomotor responses, where you use a pendulum or finger responses or some means to elicit information from your unconscious without this rational self, which thinks it knows all
right.
The answers.
It's always interrupting. It's always, hey, wait a second, don't do that. You can't do that.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Impossible. That'll never happen. Don't. And it's, so it's... And we're hearing it from not just that, but there's everything around us. Then, you know, if we watch TV, I'm sure that has influence on us. And
well, it does, but these are all kind of echoes from back when you were a little kid and your mother's telling you, oh, don't do that, or you can't do that, you can't cross the street, you're not allowed to do that, you shouldn't do that, this isn't right, that's evil, that's, you know, and so forth. We pick up an awful lot because earlier generations share with us their inhibitions and their fears and their the limits to their self-esteem and their, again, their beliefs and definitions.
So do you believe that A lot of the stuff, pretty much most of it, is we're carrying over from a very early point in our life. And would you also believe that maybe we're carrying it from a previous time?
Absolutely, and both are the case. The thing is that we bring it into our life in a fashion. The consciousness that we are spans death. We do this many times.
Mm-hmm.
But what you bring into a lifetime is these propensities. You have certain tastes. You have certain capabilities. You'll find that from birth, that no matter what your siblings, what their interests are, yours are unique to you. And as we engage in a lifetime, then we start to implant our what we hold within us into the relationships and events and health and so forth. So you see them in both angles, but you can't see them so clearly. You can't look into your mind, for example, and see emotion. You can't see rejection mm-hmm. or failure. But they're woven into the memories and the events that you encounter on an ongoing basis. So if you want to understand those elements of you, you have to look inward and see them woven into these memories,
mm-hmm.
which you'll see in recurring patterns. Again, if you're having a problem in your life right now, you're going to see that echo back through in some fashion, back to probably the earliest time when maybe you first encounter it in relationship with your mother. And if you deal with it there and break it down into these values, you can change them.
That, you have to know the origin. Now, let me, we're going to take a break in just a moment. But, and I had a question in my mind, and wouldn't you know, I can't think of it right now. But, you've talked
good at giving answers even without questions.
I was going to ask you, because I wanted to see the personal effect on you. That's what I was thinking of. You said you used to take a lot of these vitamins, or maybe, I don't know if you took supplements or you went to the doctor. Do you have to do any of that anymore now that you have this understanding? Is your body healthy pretty much most of the time?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, at 61, pushing 62 here, I go running. I keep myself in shape. I never take a pill for some purpose. You know, and I went through all that. I went through the phase. We lived, my German wife and I lived in San Diego for a while, and of course, vitamins, and there are all kinds of approaches out there to try to impose health on your body. But still, the real effect is in place that you create your health based on your inner nature. So no matter what you try to heal, you take some vitamins to take care of this problem, you're going to have some other problem, because that inner propensity is going to work itself out. Mm-hmm. So no, at this point in life, my relationship's fine. I'm doing exactly what I want to do, travel around, give talks, meet a lot of neat people, hike in the deserts and the mountains, and maybe on occasion the Upper Peninsula.
Do you worry about what you eat? Do you worry about that much?
We eat a very good diet, but the diet isn't going to cause health for you. You know, the people that eat pretty horrible diets and still are pretty healthy.
Right.
Your body can pull what it needs out of a pretty miserable diet, but that's not, I wouldn't recommend that as a course to ongoing health. But yeah, we have a nice garden. My wife bakes all of our bread. We have a mill and a couple flakers to grind grains and seeds and so forth. So but I eat meat. We eat a very enjoyable diet. But of course, I go looking. We go to a farm once a week and get fresh milk from right about as directly from the cow as you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
The meat we buy is also from the farmer, and you can go out and meet the steer if you want before you. But it's I think an animal that's treated well.
Right. I understand.
Good life. There's nothing wrong with.
And I'm going to ask you about that in just a moment. We're going to take a break. Thomas Daniel Nehrer, it's Essence of Reality. You got a point up about an animal, and that's something I want to ask you about, because this is something that's been on my mind for a long time. We'll be back in just a moment on Out There.
Out There. Out There. Out There.
You're listening to Out There, and this program is found on the internet at outthere.podbean.com. You can also find it through a link at the Braver Institute. And that's www.braverinstitute.com. If you want, you can check out some sarcasm from Way Braver. And that's he's got a blog on there. He also writes for a local newspaper. And also, you can check out a hunting and fishing show, which is very well done on the site as well. And next week, coming up, we're going to have a show with Lisa Scheel. We haven't heard from her in a long time. And she's on to a new book, something to do with a conspiracy. We'll have to find out what that is next week on Out There. Thanks for listening.
It's out there, out there, out there, out there.
My guest is Thomas Daniel Nair. He's from Pittsburgh. Of course, he's not a Packer fan. That's unfortunate, but that's okay. I guess we'll let him root for the Steelers. They did win the Super Bowl. Most of us up here are either Lion fans or Packer fans in this neck of
the woods. Well, I think there's a certain frustration one could get by being a Lion fan. We may pass that one over. But I'm perfectly happy if the Packers make it to the Super Bowl, and I'm happy if they win as long as the Steelers aren't there.
Oh, okay. It's the essence of reality. How do we get to your website before I forget to mention that, Tom?
Well, it's mylastname.net, N-E-H-R-E-R, Nairer.net.
Okay. Now, we were talking about a number of things, but I had a question. You talked about animals, and I've read this before and heard it before, and I really feel it, too, that you said you still, even though your diet is a pretty healthy diet, if you want to term it as that, you don't have a problem eating an animal, especially if the animal is taken care of. And I was going to ask you, animals, let's say there's a lot of these huge farms that are corporate, and these animals maybe don't lead very good lives, and they take in a lot of that negativity, or there's no love. And does that affect us if we ingest that?
Well, there's no doubt about that. And you're being very kind to phrase it as the way you did. I've seen documentaries on some of these industrial I can't even call them farms. I don't know that there's a word for a big pen that you keep animals contained in, where pigs are clamped down so they can't even get up so they can suckle the little piglets, and the cows are held in one position, can never walk around for their whole lives. It's absolutely unbelievable. But yeah, in those terms, I've had emails from people saying, oh, I'm a vegetarian, and I always ask, well, why are you? And generally it's because of the mistreatment of animals. But I said, you know, if you look at cows that are well cared for on a farm, this farm we drive to, again, once a week to get milk, and again, they have beef cattle, these animals live a very good life. Yeah. They're well cared for, they're healthy, they're not pumped full of hormones, they're not given growth stimulants and antibiotics because they're so inherently unhealthy, like the ones that are kept in pens. And yes, they're going to be slaughtered, and we're going to eat them. That's a way of nature. You'll notice that tigers and lions eat animals, and we all consume each other because that's part of the flow of nature. But you still can treat these animals nicely.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible?
Right, woven into their fabric of being is the misery that they went through, and surely that passes along.
Now, I was going to ask you this, too, and this is maybe getting a little sidetracked, but you know, part of the reason I think people have done prayers for a long time or blessed something is because maybe the food did have some of that in it. Is it possible to cleanse it with your thoughts or with your words, maybe some food that has maybe not been as pure?
I don't know that the gesture is worthwhile. I think it's much better to seek out, and I think across the country anymore, TJ, and I'm sure it's the same in the Upper Peninsula as it is here in Pennsylvania, that there's more and more of a movement of buying locally. And if you go out, almost any city area outside there is going to be, especially in the east here where there's viable land and there's still some family farmers around, go out and you're going to find a culture there where you can buy a quarter of a cow and this cow was well tended.
I get that once in a while, yeah.
And free-range chickens and so forth. It's all there if you go looking. If you just go to the store and you want the convenience, you're going to get a chicken that was kept in a coop in a cage that was half again as big as that chicken and never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
If you go looking, you'll find chickens that had a pretty good life while they were there.
And it makes a difference. So moving along now with the essence of reality, we talked about how you broke this down into four angles. You talked about the journey.
Oh, yeah, we never got past the first angle, did we?
There's the journey and the path and then teachings, other teachings. Explain that if you can.
Yeah, the second angle I discuss, delving inward. There are various techniques that you can use, not really esoteric or fancy, but means by which you can look into your own unconscious and understand the meaning that's woven in there. Because at the base of what's going on in your life, you're going to find elements woven into the roots of your own mindset. So I talk about doing that. We talked about self-hypnosis, ideomotor responses, never got to dream analysis. Your dreams are a wonderful exhibitor of what you hold within your mind. You'll find meaning and symbolism woven into your dreams that you can better understand. Then I talk about some specific techniques, those to look inward and what to look for. Struggle and conflict and various other mechanisms are woven into your mind. But anyway, that's in angle two. Angle three, I look at your path. And on your path, there are, if you begin to realize there's more going on in life than what you saw before, you need a bit of a journey to get there. And on your path, you're going to find various teachings, healing techniques, spiritual activities. A lot of people are out there, tons of them, who are going to recommend to you, oh, this is all you need to know, mm-hmm. from Billy Graham pounding on a Bible mm-hmm. to people selling this or that concentration technique or mind control or religion or whatever. There's all kinds of people out there. So I talk about some illusions, some hindrances on your path that maybe save you some time. If I already went down them and I can tell you what the shortcoming is, it might save you 2 or 3 years.
Mm. And the thing is, I'm guessing the path is really a never-ending thing. You're never going to be able to absorb all of it while you're here.
That's true, but things get better and better. Your life gets better as you come to realize these inner roots, and you lose the old fears, the fear of death, the fear of something happening to you out of the blue or whatever. You're going to find that your life is a reflection of you, and it puts you in the driver's seat.
Mm, that's a nice feeling to know that.
Which, of course, leads us to angle four, because in angle four, I look at the teachings of people who have come before. And in the book, a little bit more in detail than on my website, I look at the history of how we came to how we see the world, with our roots in Christianity and pre-Christian pagan thinking, and later development from about the time of 1600 onward with Francis Bacon and Descartes, and through philosophy to move more towards scientific thinking. Hmm. And we've got this amalgam of conflicting ideas built into our Western mindset that it's really good to look at so that you can realize that these are just ideas. So I talk about in angle four, I look at the teachings specifically of Jesus of Nazareth and what he had to say, how that differed from what the traditional Hebrew thinking was up until his time, what he had to say, but how Paul came and kind of threw the real historic Jesus away and imposed his notion of this Savior, this Messiah character on what Jesus had been, and that's how Christianity came. But I also look at the teachings of Buddha and how he changed Hindu thinking before mm-hmm. him. I discuss a little of Lao Tzu and the Tao and Taoism,
mm-hmm.
Because he was also very clearly aware of this flow in your life.
There's a similarity in all of those, isn't there?
Absolutely. When Jesus of Nazareth was talking about the kingdom of heaven, he wasn't talking about some post-death judgment where heaven and hell are imposed on you by this judgmental God. Because heaven and hell are right here. If your life's working right, it's heaven. If it's not, it's hell. And we generally have some mixture of both,
yeah.
which we, you know, there are means to get rid of the hell. Get the hell out of there, you might say.
I want the hell to get out of my hell right now. So, you know, and this is something that I was hoping this was a path we'd go down as far as talking about these kind of things. And those people that listen to us, you know, there's a lot of people that are open right now, I find. And they still have a religious belief. I'm not saying I have all the answers. What I have to say is right. If it works for you and you want to believe that, I think the greatest thing you can do is just allow people to go, right? Whatever direction they want. This is just something I'm interested in. And Tom is nice enough to, you know, I bet you get some heat about this, don't you?
Well, I used to. And, of course, I have given talks where people got up and left because what happens, we associate very closely with our beliefs. And remember, those beliefs we absorbed when we were 6 months old, a year, 2 years, generally mm-hmm. from our parents mm-hmm. who were providing us nurturing and love and are for certainly the culture that surrounds us. And these are the standard definitions we learn to see ourselves and our world through. So people can get uncomfortable. If I would sit in a group of Islamists and tell them, well, you know, Allah doesn't really exist.
Ooh.
That wouldn't be a real problem.
You probably wouldn't get out of there alive. I don't think you would be doing too many more talks after that.
But I try to bring across the point that you're creating these patterns in your life, and if you want to see the roots to them and change, this is how to do it. And if you attribute the causality of those patterns to some big force, let's not name the force, some big powerful force out there. In effect, what it does is make you powerless.
Mm-hmm.
It attributes all the causality to something else, which, if you strongly hold that and you have these intense, we all want to be successful, we want to have a good relationship, we want health. If you have the intent for all these good things to happen, but you picture yourself as powerless, you almost guarantee
that
a lot of those things won't happen.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And I lose sight of that too, and I believe what you're saying. And I've heard it before, so many different ways. And it's just good to hear another view of it. I always think we need a lot of reminders too, a lot of reminders in our life. And you're going to put it in a certain way, and somebody else is going to come along and maybe put it. And we were talking about this before, and we're almost out of time. But it's an evolution, isn't it? It's kind of an evolution, Tom.
A personal evolution. We are changing. We're all changing. When you recognize that, the big advantage is then you can kind of put some focus on it. People who don't recognize that the purpose of life is to grow and to become a better being and to improve yourself and your life and that of others, when you realize that, then you can put some effort on it. If you don't realize it, then you end up watching all the TV shows you're supposed to watch and have the career you're supposed to have and go to the doctor you're supposed to go to, and your life becomes rather fill in the blanks, and pretty soon they bury you somewhere.
And your life has been affected by all this, right?
Oh, absolutely, TJ. I'd say in my 30s I had jobs. I was always working for this pointy-haired boss straight out of Dilbert, where no matter what I did, somebody else would get credit for it, and I'd get stabbed in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I had trouble with relationships. I mean, one time I sat down and thought of all the pretty girls that I was attracted to who either rejected me or weren't interested or whatever, 100 of them. And those patterns went on and on until I realized, the roots to that are within me, and found the means to change. And my life is really great now. I, again, encounter important, interesting people like you, and the people I run into in my talks, and I can share these things. I travel around. We have a great diet. We live in a nice little house in a comfy neighborhood. My life is really great, but it's still challenging and interesting.
But you really seem to be living what you're talking about. It seems to be flowing for you.
That's for sure. In fact, I often have to chuckle a little bit. You go to a doctor and he's smoking and overweight and so forth, and you can't expect to get health from somebody who isn't really healthy. And you go for advice to a finance counselor or something, and this guy's having to overcharge you because whatever he does with his money isn't working very well. So yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the living embodiment of what I say, that if you find the inner roots to things and you change, your life will work better.
Well, we have to talk again if you would like to. I would love to be able to talk again sometime down the road. And
sure.
There's much more to get into, but his name is Thomas Daniel Nehrer, and it's The Essence of Reality, Nehrer.com.
Nehrer.net.
I'm sorry, Nehrer.net?
Yeah, it's not really a company. Remember, I'm not in this to make a bunch of money.
I'm sorry.
Nehrer.net works. And if people don't remember that, just do a search on any engine for The Essence of Reality.
Well, we'll have a link on the site here as well.
Okay.
So there's a lot of interest. I think this can help people. And I wouldn't have it on my program. One of the things I like to do, and you never know with anybody, Tom, if they're being genuine. One of the things I like you said is that you're not really doing this for money. And I'd have no problem if you were. You're entitled to make it, right? But the fact is that I always want to try to hope that we got somebody on that's going to maybe help somebody. And I truly think what you have to say after looking at the information on your site, the information that you sent me, maybe there's some great knowledge that we can all gain from. Thank you very much, Thomas Daniel Nehrer.
Oh, I've enjoyed it very much, TJ.
We're going to have to chat again.
Oh, I'll be around.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.